meeting to order. Tony, you're drawing the short straw to do a roll call. Oh, there you are. There you are.
President Sensman?
Here.
Superintendent Douglas? Dr. Crockett?
Aye, present.
Ms. Espinoza? Ms. Espinoza?
Oh, here. It's difficult to hear.
Mr. Twist?
Here.
President Sensman, you have a call.
Thank you. Thank you for all of you that are here in the audience today. We appreciate your participation. Do we have any calls to the public for later? Okay. If anyone in the audience wants to speak after the presentation, if you could fill out a call to the public slip, then we'll make sure to get you up, okay? With that, Joanna, are you doing the presentation? We're talking about the...
Yes, Steve and I will be conducting the presentation. I think Ashley has some words to say.
Madam Executive Director, yes. Hello. Welcome.
It's great to be here. Thank you, President Sensman, and members of the subcommittee. Ashley Berg, new Executive Director of the Board. Just started on Monday, so I'm looking forward to my first subcommittee meeting. With that said, I'll turn it over to both Joanna and Steve, who put together the presentation for today.
Are you guys doing a PowerPoint?
No, we're not.
Oh, okay.
So good afternoon, President Sensman and Board Subcommittee members. Today, Steve and I plan to walk you through the key substantive changes of the new charter application for the 2018-19 application cycle. As such, this presentation will focus on the table and timeline that was provided to you in the discussion summary document. We've also provided the public that is attending a copy of that discussion document as well. So just to give a little bit of background, charter law and the administrative code require that the board post on its website an application that has been approved and adopted by this board by March 31st of each year. In order to prepare an application annually for the board's consideration, board staff begins taking notes on areas within the application that require further clarity during the annual application process. Next, after the board has considered the application packages at a board meeting like the ones that you considered in December, then staff begins organizing all of those technical changes into an updated application for the board to consider at a future meeting. However, this year, feedback we received from the applicants, curriculum evaluators, the Arizona Charter Association, and the Arizona Charter Schools Program prompted staff to make significant substantive changes in addition to the technical ones that we identified to this application. These changes are intended to provide the applicant ample opportunity to demonstrate the capacity to design and implement a plan for operating a school to serve their identified target population. This is done by expanding the criteria in the application to focus an applicant on clear and comprehensive descriptions of their narrative responses. In requiring this level of detail in the written responses, it's intended to reduce the amount of time spent by the technical review panel during the capacity interview asking further clarification to the responses and allowing for discussion during this capacity interview of the practical implementation and evaluation of the applicant's capacity to implement the plan as described in the charter application. In addition, these changes would reduce also administrative workload. So the table included in the discussion document reviews the changes staff is recommending. Steve and I intend to review only the key changes in each plan. There's three of them, educational, operational, and business, and address any questions that you may have. So I'm going to proceed with the significant changes to the educational plan. The first one being A1, educational philosophy. So that's in the table that was provided. Correct. In expanding the criteria for this section, an applicant from the beginning establishes their rationale for the selected philosophical approach and connects how this approach is conducive to learning. The criteria focuses the applicant on describing how the student will learn and what that teacher's role in that learning will be. So that's the significant change there. The next one is sections 3.1 mastery and promotion and 3.2 course offerings and graduation requirements. These two sections are only completed based on the grade levels that you're requesting. So an applicant has to fulfill 3.1 if they're going to serve grades K through 8, and an applicant fulfills 3.2 if they're also going to teach high school grades. So one's for elementary, one's for high school. So in these two sections, the existing criteria has been clarified to have the applicant provide specific details on how students are promoted and how credit is awarded. It specifically requires the applicant to detail their criteria and conditions and their rationale for how these methods demonstrate a student's capacity to pass state assessments. And then the last significant change in the educational plan is the instructional analysis piece. One of the main areas for change this fiscal year was to address the intent of the curriculum samples in the application and how this section could be modified. In reviewing curriculum samples, the TRP, Technical Review Panel, is determining whether the applicant understands the rigor of the required state standard and demonstrates how their educational model can effectively teach the standard to mastery for all the grade levels that they are requesting. Based on feedback from stakeholders, staff revised this section to be an analysis of specific instructional components and require applicants to provide responses for standards within grade level bands in reading, writing, math, and science. And in doing that, we've been able to reduce the amount of documents that they would have to submit in this particular section. So that ends my brief overview of the significant changes in the educational plan. Do you have any questions for me?
Yeah. Just as we, Madam President, start to frame the discussion, or the lens through which we'll have the discussion, I think it'd be good to hear from staff, because I want to get to a question about potential redundancies that could be in the application, and maybe you could actually speak to some that you have a sense may still be redundant. But I think before we get to that, I would like the committee to be able to discuss the value proposition to the board in having some level of cumbersomeness in an application, because that mitigates having either staff see too many applications from people that aren't serious about it, it shows the seriousness, but where that line is, where it becomes so cumbersome that it's onerous and maybe even draconian. But I just thought it might be good to level set on that question about what is the strategy, and would love to hear staff enter into that conversation, but what is the strategy about that balance? Does that question make sense?
No, I'm
sorry. Probably a better way to ask it.
Yeah, and we had some of that discussion a few years ago when we went to having a cost to submitting an application. Mm-hmm. You know, because before staff was seeing just, you know, people willy-nilly, you know, throwing in. There was also a lot of good applicants, but there was also a lot of where they were repetitively putting in, and then staff was doing a lot of almost the consulting work to help them figure out the application.
Right.
And so some of it was a change of, so the $5,000 that it cost to submit an applicant, some of it was due to, you know, we were having issues with, you know, when you're asking people to do things pro bono, they don't always do it on time. And so there were some challenges with folks that we had reviewing, not hitting their deadlines like they needed to. And so we felt like, you know, if we perhaps provided a stipend or something that then it would be more, they'd be more purposeful, you know, about it.
But then, sorry, were these board members?
No, these were
the technical review panel.
Yeah, we'd volunteer for that before. Yeah, and so, you know, when you're asking volunteers to do stuff, sometimes you don't always hit those hit those metrics, you know, that you want to on a timing standpoint. So some of it, when we had that discussion to install a fee to put out, was kind of along those lines as well. It was, we wanted people to be very sure that they wanted to do it and then be invested, you know, in doing it. And then part of it was, you know, we wanted to go to using NAXA and, you know, some of the other resources, and those just cost money that we, our board just doesn't have access to do that. So that was one of the considerations of, we don't want to make it too easy, we don't want to make it too, it's, you know, it's like we want the porridge to be just right, you know, in doing it. So I think that's a great question to ask and to kind of look at this through that lens.
So can we let staff just play around with that question for a little bit for us? So kind of where your gut is on this, and then obviously your professional vantage point.
Right. Would you mind repeating the question?
Yeah, so trying to just establish a lens through which we think about which of the parts of the application we think are necessary. And I'm using the kind of a sense here of you've tried to mitigate some redundancies. It looks like you've tried to make this in certain areas easier, but we want to prevent just any schmuck from applying, right? And just kind of rolling the die and see if they can get a school, and, you know, see if they get some kids for a little bit and make some money. While at the same time, we don't want to make it so onerous that we discourage people from entering into that process. So I think what I'd like to hear from you all is, if that's a tightrope that we're walking, just walk us through where you think this mitigates the two extremes. That's the second time I've asked a question, and I think my second time it got more convoluted. So if you ask me a third time, I'll probably be in another language.
Could be a different question.
Yeah, it could be, yeah. Then I'll ask you what you think of the conference.
Okay, so Steve and I have discussed this, so I'm going to share my response, and then want to add to that and also share your response. So I've been conducting this application process since I started. That was one of my main responsibilities in the beginning. And I would agree with Kathy that when we entered into incorporating the application fee, that made a big difference in being able to differentiate between the ones that were serious and not serious. Prior to the fee, we would be reviewing close to 40 applications, and it took a lot of staff time in order to do that, and less than half would make it through. We're still at that point here where we may get now 14 applications and still only half actually make it through the evaluation process, so it's just that background. But in regards to the application was revised or went through a subcommittee like this back in March of 2012. And what we did there was pretty much trying to answer your question, was we wanted to make the application rigorous, not onerous, and included criteria that was very evaluative versus saying, describe this or list that, because that's pretty easy to do, and a consultant could do that very easily for you. We felt that now, 5 years down the road, it was time to once again come in and make revisions to this, to look for any redundancies, to assess whether the criteria that we had created years back was really getting us what we needed. And that's what we found. We found that through our capacity interviews, and Steve can speak to more of that, the TRP was asking questions that technically should have been already incorporated into the responses. But because the way that the criteria was written, it didn't get to those. And so that was our intent in this revision, in order to really increase the level of detail so that we're getting an idea of, tell us about your educational plan or your operational plan and your business plan, but tell us what that looks like in your school, not what a great enrollment policy looks like or school calendar, but what does that look like for your school? And so that's what the intended revised criteria is supposed to do. All of that to get to the fact that We want to assess your capacity as an applicant, whether you can thoroughly describe this in written form for us in this application. And so I feel that in order to be able to do that, I feel that the criteria needs to be specific and needs to be rigorous and needs to provide the adequate information so that when they're up before the technical review panel for their interview, the interview panel is really just focused on, we want to see what your practical implementation is of what you just described in your charter. Mm-hmm. And we may provide you some scenarios on how you would do that. So that's.
Yep, thank you. Answer. Yep. Steve, you want to add?
Sure. So, President Sussman, Member Twist, it's a topic we debated a lot, is to how do you balance an application, and rather than talk about being cumbersome, we talk about rigor in the responses. So what does a rigorous, you know, response look like that's going to give us sufficient detail without becoming a barrier to someone being successful? And so when I participated in the technical review panel, I observed those discussions to listen to what the nature of their questions were in evaluating the applications. They would often ask some technical guidance questions to me. You know, their gut as an expert would look at a response and say, it's sort of there, but you know, I'm operating a school, or in my experience, that I feel like there should be more. When we looked at the criteria, as Joanna indicated, they met what they, you know, were the phrasing asked for, but everybody knew there should be more meat to that. And when I looked at the capacity interview questions, I saw a lot of questions about tell us more, provide more details, say more, because they knew that they had met the criteria, but for them to be comfortable giving that recommendation, they just wanted to really delve deeper into, do they really understand, can they respond to the level that we are comfortable handing them a charter. So we looked at those pieces in terms of getting to that rigor. We looked at what are the biggest barriers, and that's really that curriculum sample section, which there are so many discrete components to that section of the application. Mm-hmm. Was it getting us what we need, or were there issues that would prevent someone being successful? Well, we could look at that to say, do they really understand that? So what we focused on was a couple things, was getting us that detail in the criteria. There were a few items that we, I think, combined and shifted some pieces around. We restructured the flow of some of the criteria to build a more logical sequence in the narrative so that the response would be less fragmented. So if there were six criteria, as opposed to approaching like a checklist, we would, for example, front load, for example, school governing board is one of the criteria. Let's start with, do they understand what the responsibilities are? Now let's use that as the context for building to the next section of, now you're gonna talk about your composition. How do those qualifications that you're looking for support, now that you've described what you understand the responsibilities of the governing board to be. So we've tried to thread that narrative piece through. So I think in terms of redundancy, some of those pieces may be eliminated through the sequence that we're presenting the criteria that allows them to more logically present the information. The other piece that we focused on was tying things back to the program of instruction and the mission. So in terms of assessing their capacity, you can tell us about all those pieces, but what does that look like in action? So do you have a specific mission? What are your outcomes? So how do those pieces get there? That gets to the rigorous piece. And I think by in our analysis of looking at past applications, really the biggest barrier was the curriculum sample piece and the business plan and operational plan. You know, if there are items that the board wishes to, you know, to reconsider, we're definitely open to that. But I feel like over the past few years, that has really been refined to give us the crucial components. What we're just looking at now is, can we get that depth and rigor in the responses?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So a well-structured application in the mind of staff means that the boxes that you get to check is that you have a serious applicant, understands the business of the business, and that ultimately the review board, the review panel, does the review panel make recommend? How does that, what's the,
the
they sign off on the, okay, go ahead.
Yeah, the review panel provides an analysis or recommendation report to staff.
They do make recommendations to staff.
To staff.
Yes,
and then staff prepares the materials and then ultimately provides the board a recommendation.
Right, okay, so this, you think this speeds up the process as well, or?
Speeds up the process. Go ahead.
I was going to say, in terms of speeds up the process, I think the revisions that we're making, I don't know that I would say speeds up the, in terms of the amount of time to, you know, for example, the biggest change, and I don't think we got into the detail of this, in the instructional analysis and curriculum samples. Previously, an applicant for each grade level that they were addressing would have to submit a math curriculum sample, reading curriculum sample, writing curriculum sample. If it was fourth or eighth grade or high school, also science. So for example, a K-8 school would have to submit 29 curriculum samples.
Yeah.
We've reduced that by going into the grade spans to say, okay, if you're serving any of the grade levels within these spans, you will provide a reading, writing, and math. So if you were serving K-8 now, you would give us one writing sample for K-2, one for the 3-5, and one for the 6-8. So we've reduced the number of documents, which I think alleviates a burden on the applicant, and also the TRP. However, we're reducing the number of documents. What the analysis is giving is more time for the folks in depth in describing how their instructional model is addressing those specific Arizona standards, what that looks like for how they will achieve student mastery, to develop our understanding of what, that they know what that looks like, rather than giving us just a mountain of documents.
So the mountain of documents isn't so much a problem for the applicant in your mind, but it is a problem for the
Oh no, I think it's also an issue for the applicant. Yeah, I think when you look at, if you're gonna open K-8 and you've got that many curriculum samples, there are that many more opportunities for, you know, minor errors. That, you know, there are so many discrete components that we're looking at with assessments and rubrics and all of those pieces. By reducing the number of items that are being evaluated in terms of putting them together, there's, I don't wanna say, it's less items but more depth. That, so we're going deeper rather than broad on the curriculum pieces, so that they can really focus rather than a broad scattershot approach to curriculum.
I think there's a follow-up question on this, and I don't want to belabor it, and I know I'm kind of pushing on the front end because I have to leave early, so I'm sorry, but so the devil's advocate would say, well, all right, the board is going to give charters out, and it does that as almost like a strategic investment. Mm-hmm. And it by doing that knows it's essentially putting money, right, in the hands of those practitioners. Those practitioners are coming to this board with a claim of having a solid product, right, which the market will hopefully have. Will demand and will demand for it, and that it'll be good for the marketplace. So on the question of it being onerous to the applicant, it seems like if you're going to go to market with a product, the full breadth of that product should be well thought through, formulated, and documented before you go to your investor. Because your investor isn't going to want to see a broad, you know, general summary of your product. The investor's going to want to know that the product, soup to nuts, has been thought through, and that at any single moment you can answer a specific question about the thing that you're bringing to market. So the argument could be made that it's advantageous to the board to expect the applicant to be able to go down to detail with the actual products that they're bringing to market in each one of the very specific classrooms that they are going to actually be running. And that this allows for staff to initially see that they are serious. It does create, I could see, a sense of obligation to look through each one of those. And maybe we need to talk about that. But I'd love to hear your response to this idea that these are people looking for an investment from the state to bring to market a particular product. And what we've essentially said in the new application is we can see less of what that product actually is, the material being of that product. But I throw that out just to make sure that we're not skirting over it.
I think it's a good discussion. I would just ask and again, I'll be your devil's advocate, on this. Do you think at Great Hearts that your model that you have could be captured in taking a few of your classes and doing a deep dive on them versus having to do that for everyone? I mean, do you think that someone could get the sense of what your curriculum is based on and what your philosophy is based on doing a sample versus going through every single grade level on that? Because
I think it's hard to answer that question because I think I, of course, from my Great Hearts position, would be compelled to say, no, of course you can get the whole. If I'm thinking about it from a board's position and there's a completely new entity coming to our, mm-hmm. coming to the table and asking for something from you and from us, one of the things that I'd like to see is that before they try to go to market, before they even think that they should be allowed to go to market, they have a viable product in their mind. And so what I'm saying is, I think it's really hard to answer that question because Great Hearts is a known entity, and I probably have some self-interest in the way that I want to answer that because it's burdensome. But I also want to say, is it really that burdensome? Because in hell, if I want to go and teach kids, shouldn't it be one of the first things that I start to put to paper or that I at least come in my due diligence period, that I come to the different operators there are around the world and go, this is where I'm going to hang my hat. Because I will tell you that when we went into the elementary school business, and this board helped us do that, we went first to Ridgeview Classical in Colorado and, essentially just bought. We didn't know how to run an elementary school. We just looked at that. We went and toured it. I was flown up there, and we kind of smelled around and went, yeah, I think this is classical enough. This is probably good. We'll fix it as we go along. But it was the first thing we did was try to think about the scope and sequence. And so we had tons of documents that we could easily just put in. It's not like we had to create them. And I guess what I'm worried about is this creates a situation where you could come to us and be reviewed, not having created all of them. That creates that potential situation. And so you come and you bring us a document for each grade. We don't know that behind that there's nothing. And I throw that out as, is it really that onerous for the applicant if this is the business they want to get into? Aren't those the documents that they should have, they should be overflowing with?
So. My back and forth with you on this is that, to me, I think if you're serious and you're putting this in, right, that, you're not going to just knock it out of the park for the three or four, grade level samples that they need, because you need to have all your grade levels doing a good job, So, I don't think that someone's going to, if we do, what would you do in a K through six? How many? Or K through eight, how many samples, curriculum samples?
Currently?
Well, in this.
Oh, in this, it would be...
more like nine.
It would be about nine. We're cutting it down by a little bit more than half of what they're doing.
So where I kind of fall...
That doesn't concern you at all?
No, I think if they're going to do the deep dive and they're actually going to go in at a higher level or a deeper level of drilling down on what they're doing and their philosophy and how they're going to accomplish that, I don't necessarily think that changes for, I had to submit it for grade three, but I didn't for grade four, and so, I'm just going to slack on four and hope that,
Okay, so I'm all for, just in principle, I'm all for going deeper into some of them.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is that I want to have to be revealed to staff initially that they could go deep on everything throughout the grades. And that staff gets to choose the ones that they're going to go deep on. There isn't a requirement on every document to go deep on each of them. But aren't we creating the conditions under which, if you really, Kathy, if you really were trying to scam the system, mm-hmm. And there are people out there that do that because there's money to be made. This makes it easier to look like you know what you're doing in 9 areas and never have to show that you could actually discuss the other 36 or, you know, if you, it depends on how you slice this. That it seems to me that you should be able to show a comprehensive program in each of the offerings, programmatic offerings that you're going to bring to those classrooms. And they sit there and they're for staff to look at and then to ask questions.
But don't you think if you're gonna be talking about, you know, English, right, and you're gonna give several curriculum samples over several grades in this new system, does that really change from 2 grade levels away? Or I guess where I'm getting at, and this is where
No, it doesn't. Yeah. What I'm saying is, yeah, I just want to know that you actually have built that.
Yeah. No.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I hear where you're coming from. You know, where I kind of land on this, or the lens that I look at it through is, you know, it's like, how do you make sure the porridge is just right? You know, and so, you know, I've heard from operators that have said, you know, the school that my kids go to, Challenge Charter School, has said if they had to go through what we put charters through today, they probably couldn't be a charter, you know, because of the financial rigor that we have, and, you know, they mortgaged everything to, you know, be one of the first, you know, pioneers, you know, doing this, you know, and they look at a lot of, like, what we're doing, and I've heard from others, you know, that a lot of these curriculum samples are just so redundant, you know, in it, and so, to me, I would rather have a school, a charter applicant, really doing a deep dive on English of how they're going to do it in those grades, and then I guess I have confidence that if they're doing it for those curriculum samples, it's going to be spread out over the grades is how I look at it. So instead of having to do...
So you want them to be able to come and get their application before they've finished all of that curriculum work?
Yeah, because I think most of these charters don't open for a year, sometimes 2 years, you know, in there, and so... If we were going to give them a charter and they were going to open in August, then I think I'm on board with you. Like, I would want to know exactly all of that, you know. But I think knowing that most of these take, you know, 2 years, you know, to open, I guess I'm more worried about, or I'm more interested in, you know, staff making them do a deep dive. Because if you have this philosophy on English, you know, in kindergarten or third grade or, you know, whatever those samples are going to be, then to me, I extrapolate out, you know, you're not just going to pick those grades to do great in. You're going to do, you know, you're going to do great in all your grade levels, you know, in that. And you're not going to just say, well, we'll deal with that later because, you know, it builds on it. So I like making it, I don't want to say easier, you know, because I think the rigor that they're talking about, I think is actually going to be harder than what it was before. So I think, for me, the trade-off is we'll require less paperwork, you know, but what you do submit is going to have a much kind of sharper lens looking at it, and your responses to that or your ability to articulate it is going to be viewed with more emphasis on it. And so for me, I would trade just submitting stuff to submit stuff, like I checked the box, and I would rather have, like, the 9, you know, submissions you're going to make for a K-8, I would rather have those be, you know, my proof positive that you know what you're talking about.
And the panel then exposes a lack of depth through the question and answer around those.
Kathy, I wanted to add something. So, in the educational plan, another component that addresses somewhat of having the full curriculum in place, most of our applicants don't have that in place because they do have 2 years to create this.
Yeah.
But part of that educational plan is about incorporating also an academic systems plan, which is that sort of an improvement, not a continuous school plan. That incorporates providing us the details of their systems for curriculum, monitoring instruction, assessment, professional development. That also gives the technical review panel an idea that they have thought through what the steps are in order to put action into writing their curriculum, identifying when they're going to do those things. And so it's based on also looking at that plan, along with, in this case, the instructional analysis that they have. They understand how to identify rigor in these standards, mm-hmm. or in the standards that are selected, gives us a better idea that they have thought through what their educational model is going to be like. So that's an additional one that's part of that application.
Yeah, that's good. Mm-hmm. I think I'm sold.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I keep robbing you until you agree with us.
Yeah, I know. Seriously.
No, but I mean, I really think, you know, to me, you know, I think if a school is willing to, you know, put the time in to get the nine, you know, in this scenario that we're talking about, those samples right, and to do it well and with fidelity, then, you know, I would like to assume the best of that operator, that they're going to be able to do
you're
that for
you're
all the
a good person.
Yeah. Well, and
you're nice to me.
But I mean, to me, it's not in their best interest to do a poor job in other it, you know, and well, they didn't check me on that, so I can really slack off in that, you know. That hasn't, I mean, sure, we have some bad operators, you know, out there, but I would say, you know, 99% of them, you know, want to, you know, they come into this wanting to do a good job.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I fall more on the side of, if they can do these nine really, really well, and they can, you know, get past these guys, you know, because I know you guys aren't, you know, you guys are no, by no means easy, you know, because everyone complains about you guys all the time, especially you, Steve. And, you know, so if they can kind of get through this process and they can do it well with nine, then, I would like to err on the side of that, you know, they're good operators and that it is in their best interest. Because at the end of the day, if they decide not to do that, they're going to be before us pretty quickly, you know, and having to answer. And so I think a lot of the things that we've done to date has been more of, you know, a personal responsibility on the charter. To do it well.
Yeah. So
I see this in that vein of that kind of philosophy of where we've been going.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm with you on that. I think I, you answered it for me when you just gave me more of the timeline. Mm-hmm. When you said, hey, if you're here before us and you want to open in August and it's right now, mm-hmm. that's completely different. Yeah. I think you should have more of a baked cake. Mm-hmm. I think I buy into the idea that the cake doesn't have to be entirely baked, and that's where it might be onerous mm-hmm. if you're expecting that 2 years prior. Mm-hmm. So I'm sold on that. I just, I'm just wanting, just for the record, my real concern here was that you could come with something that was simpler to put together, and you weren't expected to show the full kind of most viable product that you were gonna, and that staff got to really mm-hmm. see that you knew what you're. But I think it can be an unbaked cake.
Well, President Twist, the other component that's part of this is we've identified specific standards that need to be addressed. So as we went through that, we looked for rigorous standards, and one of the pieces within a specific grade level or in a content area such as math, there are some standards that can be very procedural, particularly mm-hmm. lower elementary grades, and there's some that deal with larger mathematical concepts that can be a little bit more abstract, and we leaned more towards that mathematical concepts and abstract side so that we can delve into their understanding of how to get a student to develop understanding of a concept rather than teaching a specific like algorithmic process.
Yeah.
This is how you teach fractions. We can tell kids to do these steps versus, for example, in fifth grade math, talking about multiplication is scaling is this concept, and how do you break that down, and how does your instructional model develop that knowledge? So we picked rigorous Arizona standards as well that have depth to them.
Can you explain that more, Steve? So yeah, what was the baseline for the standards that now you're using?
So we went through, the first thing was we didn't use standards that we'd used previously.
Yeah.
So we changed those up. And looking at them, we, you know, with writing, there's not a lot of area to move because there's basically three different modalities of writing that you're going to deal with, which is narrative, persuasive, and type of, what was it?
Informational.
Which, for the record, is full crap. Keep going.
So we were sort of limited
with
those pieces.
Serve kids great for many generations. Persuasive writing. Keep
yes.
going. All right.
Exactly. So when it comes to math, that's really where we looked at standards that focus on understanding of mathematical concepts. So for second grade, demonstrating understanding of addition and subtraction connecting objects or drawings to strategies based on place value, properties of operations, and the relationship between addition and subtraction. So it's not teach kids how to add or subtract, you know, digits with below 100. It's how do they understand the concept of that. So that, to me, is requires a little bit more understanding of how your philosophy and program instruction are going to apply to that. It's easy to come up with a lesson plan where I can go online and say, here's how to teach students how to add and subtract numbers. How do I apply that understanding, and what does that look like within our model? So those are the standards we looked for in those areas of conceptual constructs for students.
Huh. Ashley, are you familiar with this? This?
Go, taking it
so
for dive.
The concept, right? Mm-hmm. So the way I hear it is that whereas in the past you might just have to prove that you can get to some type of factual regurgitation, right? Or you can add two-digit numbers together.
Right.
With the you're saying you want to go, you want the standard then to be a little deeper in being able to explain the why.
Yes, so to get deeper in the instructional analysis, to give them a standard that they can delve into,
yeah,
to explain how they will. I'm a high school English teacher. When you, yeah, look at the standards, you know, how do you teach someone to think is a little bit different from giving them a process of how to do something sequentially. And so when we see that in there, to me, that requires a greater understanding of how to teach to get the student from not understanding this concept to owning and understanding that concept.
So the educator in me agrees with the principal. From political, philosophical standpoint, I would like to spend a little bit of time. So I think you're right. Your inclinations are right. As a quick anecdote, remember when I was running one of our elementary schools at Great Hearts, we, you know, opened a school with like 520 kids day one, and some of them, parents told us, were in their gifted math program at the other school they went to, and they wanted us to track them. And so I found these kids, and I brought them into my other fifth graders, and I put 2 force plus 3 force on the board. And every single one of those gifted math kids could get me to 1 1/4. The moment you ask them why, say you don't add denominators, they have no idea, okay? And the moment you ask them to give a pictorial representation of what was abstractly, they could not do it, right? They had memorized the algorithm. So from our standpoint, that was a failure on the part of every teacher or system that had served them up until that point. We were gonna fix that, and we have been fixing it. I'm not convinced that this body should be getting to that level.
These are the recently adopted Arizona standards that we've selected.
No, I know, but what I'm saying is, as a means of trying to, putting you in a position where you're trying to interpret the way, I mean, I guess I can see you asking certain questions and you know, I can see it in the question and answer period. I don't know how it looks just in terms of, I'm thinking about my friends at Basis, and I don't think they would much more, and I'm totally speaking for them now, I hope this is on the record, and I hope it goes into the Arizona Republic. They're drilling, they want to drill algorithms. The why actually isn't important when you're taking the AP. I think there are schools out there that can still hit the assessments that are a lot. I'm just talking about, in the end, the state ultimately is going to judge based on the assessment data, not on whether or not an argument can be made for the pedagogy that gets to the why. And so while, yes, there are standards that are expecting certain things, those aren't assessed. And I just wonder if this board should be getting into the tricky place of trying to make heads or tails of the philosophical arguments that are wrapped up in these pedagogical questions. I just don't know how you'll do that. and then what you're going to bring to us in terms of the reports on that that we can trust. That's a really technical question, and I'm not saying you need to answer it now, but it is something that I worry about.
So in a situation where, say, you would have, this is your example of Great Hearts and Basis, you would have a Great Hearts approach to teaching algorithms, and you'd have a Basis approach to teaching algorithms, and they both submit an application to be a new school. Tell me how you'd view that. So say we decide that the Basis model doesn't really meet the standards. Then
which, for the record, would probably never be the case. Yeah. But it's fun to make them the best.
So, Charter School B. you know, tell me about, like, how you guys would view it. How would how would that scenario play out through your process?
So with this process, it's really giving them the opportunity to demonstrate how their capacity to unpack this standard. So the instructional analysis piece is, you know, here's the standard. Can you identify what a student is going to need to be, know and be able to do to demonstrate mastery? What do they need to, what's their prior knowledge? Before you even get started, what do you need to make sure that you're building on for that? And then we get into your program structure. Now that you have these, what we call learning targets, they need to be able to do these little checkpoints along the way to mastery. What is your process? What does it look like within your model to get them there? So it's not, there's not one specific right answer. Some, if you're project-based learning, if you're Montessori, you should be able to tell us, this is how our approach is gonna get a student to this specific learning target where they understand this concept. And then this is how we're gonna assess whether they've mastered it, and that's what this will look like within our instructional model. So whether you're very, you know, drill and kill process oriented, you're gonna break it down into those pieces. If you're gonna be, you know, project-based and it's more abstract, mm-hmm. how does that still get you to the same end where a student can demonstrate these specific skills and knowledge that are identified in the standard?
So it's really just kind of creating an opportunity for you guys to have a dialogue with them and to drill down and have them explain it in a way that meets the standard that they basically have to live up to after they become a charter.
So how is their specific model going to improve pupil achievement? So that we know they understand what these standards are asking students to do is the primary point. You're held accountable for providing instruction, and so that will be, you know, determined by, you know, a state assessment. So show us that you know how to get a student to that point. What is your process for that? So the reason, you know, we can you know, look at different standards. You know, what we wanted to get toward was away from curriculum samples where it started to become very cookie cutter, boilerplate, where you could go online, you could go to Engage New York and get a lesson plan there, and you tweak it a little bit, and you're just throwing things at us. We wanted to take it to that level of show us you understand what this looks like, that this leadership team has capacity, because if we're, you know, coming back to Mr. Twist's point, we're, you know, going to be giving you this contract, you're opening this business, show us you as the leadership team know what this looks like, because then your teachers are going to be responsible for taking that down to the lesson plan application level. And so if this leadership team has the capacity to break this down, then we know that they are also capable of monitoring that instruction to look at a lesson plan and say, this is a good lesson plan, this is what good instruction looks like.
It seems like the interplay between A1 and A6 is really important. I don't know if this makes sense right now, but to really get a sense of how you expect a well-devised application to hit A1, and then I almost feel like those two should be blended together on some level. I mean, any good educator knows that, you know, there's no such thing as the separation of form and content, right? Pedagogy and curricula. And so any way that we can expose those potential operators that do have a divide between form and content. And I think, by the way, let me just commend you all, because I do think it's really important for an applicant to have to show a philosophy, even might I say an anthropology behind, I mean, they're in the process of shaping human beings, so what do they think something that you think a human being should be. I really like this. It's just funny that they're visually this far apart from one another. And that, I mean, I'm not saying that that's true in terms of the way they go through it, but I do think that those two things seem to be, in for the applicant, it should be made very clear that those two things are two sides of the same coin.
If we're just talking about the educational plan, there are criteria that have always been in the application that does connect the educational plan to align with other sections within that plan section. And those aren't things that we've taken out because we really do believe in the alignment. The reason that we do have the philosophy at the beginning, because as an evaluator or a reader, you know, you start with, you know, getting the big picture of what the school's about, and then all the other components, target program, how you're awarding credit, the calendar, they all sum up to really the last two sections. The academic system plans gives you really what are you going to do as it's based on curriculum, instruction, and professional development. And then the instructional analysis really combines everything that would be incorporated in the program of instruction, the population that you're going to be serving, and the academic systems plan. And so that's why that was taken to the end, but I do understand your point of how those two are connected.
So now you're trying to make it easier?
No. I don't know, Anne. Oh, God, no.
But to me, I think, you know, I think the to come back to it, I think the trade-off of kind of less curriculum samples, but more on how do you do it, and what is your philosophy, and there's no, to me, what I heard is there's really no right or wrong answer of how you get to the standard. It's just a matter of
there's some wrong answers, but we might let them go to market.
Yeah, exactly. There are some wrong answers, but for what you guys are doing is, you know, you could look at it like you're going to do pictograms to teach math, and I'm going to, as he said, you know, the drill and kill, you know, model. So there's no one right answer necessarily of how to get there, but it's like, do you have a plan to get there? And so I like that, you know, they're looking at, I think, a more qualitative analysis, you know, of that versus can you cut and paste a bunch of different curriculum samples and, you know, give us a ream of paper, you know, on that.
Yeah,
so,
amen. I think that's brilliant. Yeah.
So that's where I'm at. So
can you move on to A2 and just very briefly explain why this matters?
So there have been, we've had responses that focus on telling us about the target population that they intend to serve, and then incorporating information that they have been provided in regards to their needs. The main difference here is that we would like to hear about how they've identified those needs. What are the needs that they've identified as an applicant that this particular population, you know, maybe we're going to the Maryville area and maybe Great Hearts has identified a particular need in there, and then you would talk about that in your application. But many times what we hear is more of the more general needs that you would see in some type of a demographic report that's published by the city. We want to have a sense that they understand what those needs are and how does that align with this philosophical approach that they have been describing to us.
Because when I read this one, I thought about, you know, some of the schools that we've seen on the reservation, you know, and specifically schools that have not done well on the reservation. Mm-hmm. And I think some of that, I don't want to analyze what went wrong or what went right, but, you know, sometimes it just seemed like they had not truly identified what some of the challenges were. And then those were the things that hung them up the most that kind of got them before our board, because they hadn't taken into account that, you know, sometimes these kids were coming in, you know, 3, 4, 5 grade levels below their age group, or, you know, kids are getting bussed for an hour at a time, you know, one way, and how does that play with when they get to school, you know. And so, you know, I like this, you know, identifying it so you can, you know, kind of figure that out, because I think that goes to, does your modeling, does your curriculum samples, do those things really fit with who you're going to be serving? I mean, I think this is actually a really important question to make sure that the school understands where they're going and how they're going to to do that. And you know, I've talked with Deanna Rowe, a former director, you know, looking at them moving into, you know, South Phoenix, and talking to her about, you know, really how they've gone through identifying what do you need and what do you have to do to be attractive to that population that's going to be in that vicinity that they would propose to draw from. And so I think this is a really insightful question, you know.
Is it new?
No.
No.
Okay. But yeah, but I just think having that in there and
you're just expanding.
Yeah, I like it, because I think sometimes when we've seen schools, you know, kind of falter, you know, not understand.
I think that's right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, what else do you have a problem?
So
what's
much.
Next?
You actually meant that as a serious question. No. I'm going to respond to it seriously.
it was half serious.
Will you just explain to me, A4, I didn't quite understand the change language here. So removed criteria referring to an alternative calendar, that is no longer an option. Just help me understand.
Yeah, so the alternative calendar was an option that that a school could choose through school finance, and I believe that has gone away.
So,
you know, standard, and then you've got the extended calendar, so the alternative calendar was another option. That has gone away, and so we've just removed that to align with what the department's doing.
Is that like with some of the online?
Some of the alternative schools would have an alternative calendar that was different from the standard one, or, you know, over 200-day one.
They could start at a different time also, basically have two calendars running at the same time as school finance. Mm-hmm.
That's right. Yeah, good.
All right.
Bad idea.
Would you like Steve to run through the major changes for the operational and business plan, or do you have specific questions about ones that you want further explanation on?
No, I'm good right now.
Okay.
For the moment.
Great.
Go quickly, Steve.
So, yeah, 30 minutes.
Well, he's in a good mood. Go quickly.
Always in a good mood. I get bullied here. Everybody knows that. Can that get on the record?
Say loudly.
A man sinned against more than sinning.
That's right.
Okay, so I briefly talked about the school governing body previously, but we're just basically focusing on, again, looking at that transparency and focusing on the capacity of that body. We do also ask in this if the applicant, that corporate board, is going to act the same as the school governing body, so that we understand if there's going to be a distinctly separate school governing body. And then again, we try to tie it back to the mission and the qualifications of that, so we can look at that mission to make determinations. For example, a mission that may focus a lot on the community, we would expect to see members of that governing board being from the community. So to look at, does that reflect the actual mission of who they're putting on that governing body? Then the next is B3.1, the education service providers. So we just asked for a little bit more detail regarding the relationship with that education service provider and how that relationship supports meeting the charter mission and implementing the program of instruction, which are the two primary facets of the educational plan. And we added a component regarding the experience of that education service provider in implementing a similar program instruction as an expectation that they would be looking at, as well as, you know, a record of improving pupil achievement. And this is just to ensure that that education service provider that they're contracting with is supporting that program instruction and mission. So if they've stated this is their mission, that it's the applicant is driving it, not the ESP coming along to do something else. We just want to see that they're aligned, that they're moving in the same direction. That is it for the operational plan. There are no other questions. I can move into the business plan. Business plan, the biggest change is C2, marketing and student enrollment. We actually moved enrollment from the operational plan to this section of the business plan, and that was when we thought about it. Enrollment is really the expected outcome of the marketing plan, so it made sense to move it into this section. If you're going to tell us all about how you're recruiting those students, then it really dovetails into, okay, now what do you do with them that they're showing up at the door? With the enrollment process, We separated out some of, there's some clarity as far as what the school is doing as far as enrollment process and registration process and which documents are collected, so that's clear what information is being collected to make decisions regarding enrolling the student and what information is collected for the purpose of registering the student at the school once they've been enrolled and identifying services to be provided to the enrolled student, so that we don't have, you know, a lot of schools will commingle those processes. If here we're identified, what we're using to make that decision in the role of the student. So it's clear that if there's other documentation that's a registration, it's not informing the enrollment process. Then we finally in C3 and personnel, it is focused on adding a little bit more detail on minimum qualifications and expectations of personnel to show capacity of this applicant to identify crucial skills to implementing the program of instruction. And also salaries. So if you've got a program of instruction that may require staff have specific qualifications or certifications and skills, describing how that is supporting that program of instruction and how those salaries are going to be adequate. So for example, if I'm going to open a Montessori school and I'm going to require all my teachers are certified, you know, trained Montessori teachers, am I paying appropriate salaries versus model where I may say, well, I'm going to train them and go through that certification process myself, and those costs are over here, so that we can see how really the team that you're hiring and those qualifications match with what your program instruction asks for. So, you know, if you're going to do project-based or your STEM, what are the qualifications of a good qualified teacher to run that program, and are you identifying those in the qualifications for your staff?
So how would... What would be your triggers for that? Just examples. Give me an anecdote. I mean, what would be a negative trigger for you?
So if we saw a, you know, a complex or very unique program of instruction, and the qualifications were basically, well, we're looking for anybody with a bachelor's degree. We don't see experience related to those fundamental components of a program of instruction. So there's specific skill sets. If we're going to have, you know, we're going to run a coding academy, but I would expect my minimum qualifications or skills or experience would have to do with, I've got some certification or training in coding, not perhaps, you know, they may be able to explain or justify some more, but I've got a bachelor's degree in math. Is that sufficient to be a lead teacher in a coding academy? So what are those qualifications? So it's up to them to explain and justify what those experiences are to support what they're asking for, so that we can ensure that when this is up and running, that we're going to have qualified people there to support those.
Steve, it seemed, that's good, I agree. You might have been alluding to an evaluation of teacher pay.
It's about...
Can you just explain what you were...
Yeah, that it's sufficient and adequate to, you know, if you've got, you know...
There's a joke in there somewhere, by the way. There's a really funny joke.
So
what would they?
So where did I go? You basically identify how the salaries are appropriate and adequate for those teachers based on those qualifications and experience.
So the Montessori, the specialist certified. You're saying that staff ought to have an idea of the market average. I mean, how are you going to...
Well, the TRP in reviewing this, we've got people that are, you know, school operators that are going to be part of evaluating this to look at, does this feel like an appropriate and adequate range for someone with this experience?
So somebody's saying, I think I can get those specialists for, you know, $30,000 a year, that's, you know, no, you probably can't.
That's something that can follow up in the interview process.
I get it. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
You know, if you say, yeah, we're going to have these, you know, master's degree certified, we're getting them for $15 an hour.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where's your pipeline for those? Because there's a lot of people who want to know where you can get people like that.
Yeah. Yeah. What if they say that's for us to know? That's not an adequate answer.
Well, that would be something that's
proprietary. I think that's really good.
Again, it's just getting to their capacity. Are they adequately aware of, if they're going to open this business, have they really thought through everything that they're going to need to do? Are they really head in the clouds, unrealistic expectations of what they can get that staff for? And that is the business plan. Those are the major changes to those components.
So if the application is approved by our board, then the last page of that discussion summary includes a timeline of how we would implement this. We do want to incorporate a new charter application workshop, which would be sort of a face-to-face here in our boardroom meeting. I know that the association has also has asked us on occasions that when we have conducted workshops, that they'd be willing to videotape it. So I'm not sure if that would still be the case, but if it would be videotaped, then that would also be accessible many other times to applicants that would be interested. We also plan on revising some of our online technical assistance, which have been very helpful in the past for our applicants, and this would be the technical support that we could provide them with these new revisions. Any questions?
No. So you need for our subcommittee a vote on this, correct? And then we'll take it to our board meeting in February for final approval, so then we can meet the February 13th.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Correct. That you've got.
Would the two people in the audience, anyone like to speak?
I just have a real quick comment.
You can go up and identify yourself for Bianca later.
All right. Hi, Yvonne Watterson, Charterskill Association. Thank you, President Sutherland, Twist. I just want to echo some of the things that Joanna said. We had an opportunity to give our feedback, and I've seen millions of curriculum samples. Mm-hmm. And even though there are so many for each application, they're inadequate because what I think prospective operators miss sometimes is that really important instructional analysis. It doesn't call for that. So what happens is you have these curriculum samples, and it's almost like just, you know, checking boxes so they can go, done. We have a compliant application, as opposed to, you know, let us show you you know, the uniqueness of our mission and how you see that at the classroom level. And I also think, just from a teacher's perspective, is that when operators see the term curriculum sample, I think that they're sometimes thinking lesson plan. And you don't want a lesson plan. So what happens is you get this collection of lesson plans that aren't really getting to what you really want, which is that instructional analysis. So I think, because I totally get what you're saying about, you know, it should feel kind of cumbersome, but just more of that doesn't hit that bar. You know, so I think that this is just a great opportunity. It's also a really nice opportunity for people to show what they can do within their unique model, so that it isn't just a cookie cutter kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Because as it is right now, you really can't. I think that people can sort of go out and get anyone to write it for them. This forces people to really sit down and look at their mission and go, okay, this is who we are, this is what it's going to look like at the classroom level, and then, you know, you've got the 2 years, and you start to hire your teachers, and then they can really, because, I mean, curriculum, at a school level, it's a collective inspired product, hopefully. So you wouldn't want to have it all ready to go, you know, 2 years ahead of time. So really, I just wanted to, you know, to share that, you know, we have provided feedback, and I know that we have worked with Mark Francis with the CSP folks, you know, just sharing some of the same concerns. You know, how do you get to that sweet spot where compliance intersects with quality? And I think the way it currently is, we're sort of missing it. So I'm excited about the opportunity to do it this way.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
I'm good.
You're good. That may be a first.
She's really good.
She is.
I'm an equal opportunity offender today.
You got whiskey in your coffee. Gin in your bottle.
That's right. All right. So with that, is there a motion to accept the new charter application as presented?
So moved.
Is there a second from someone on the phone?
I'll second that. This is Espinosa.
Okay. All right. If you could call the roll, please.
Dr. Crockett? Dr. Crockett? Ms. Espinoza?
Aye.
Mr. Twist?
Aye.
President Sensman?
Aye.
Motion passed.
Please support.
All right. Thank you all. Thank you, staff, for putting all this together and the stakeholder process and everything you guys went through to get here. I know that it was not easy, but I really appreciate you including folks and making this a collaborative process. I think it's going to be a great end product when we start. So,
and suffering my inquiry.
And suffering through Mr. Twist. So I appreciate the.
Just been like, God, we've done all this work. And
the last subcommittee.
Newbie won't shut up.
Last subcommittee.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
No. All right, with that, we're adjourned. Thank you all.